Imagine how it would be to visit a museum and see your own heart in a display case. That's what's happened to Jennifer Sutton at the Hunterian Museum in London, 16 years after the heart she was born with was removed as she underwent transplant surgery. Jennifer is now 38, living in Cornwall, England. Can we take you back? You were a university student in 2007. How did you discover that you had a problem with your heart?
It was my second year of my three-year university degree. I'd always thought that I was a little bit slower than my colleagues and my peers, but I didn't really think much of it. And one of my friends at the time said, "Oh, you're actually very slow, and you don't actually look very well. You're a bit blue, actually. Your lips have gone blue, and you should probably come and speak to our GP. We only live down the road, and I think it's important to get checked out." So I went along with him and had my appointment with the GP, and they took one listen to my heart and took me straight to the local A&E. I stayed in hospital for about 2 weeks for them to stabilize me and work out that there was something wrong with my heart. They'd heard a murmur at the doctors and realized it was quite a bad murmur. And within those 2 weeks, they'd worked out that I must have something wrong with my heart. It took 4 years after that for them to do tests and come up with the answer of restrictive cardiomyopathy is what I ended up having. Yeah.
Those initial symptoms of being slow how? Slow walking, slow talking? And did those symptoms stay with you for the 4 years?
Yes, they did. I was very slow walking, mostly up hills. I'd always stop and pretend I was looking at the view or taking a picture or something rather than admitting that I was really out of breath, or very breathless, felt dizzy a lot, felt very, very tired. I slept an awful lot more than anyone my age that I knew, just very run down and very tired. And during those 4 years, it went from thinking that I had something wrong with me to very much knowing. I think I got very swollen, my wrists and ankles swelled up, and I just felt very, very unwell. And even, you know, walking on the flat, even a few meters, made me incredibly restless. My heart would race, and I was blue in my lips, blue on my cheeks, and just, yeah, not feeling very well.
No, it sounds like a really hard time.
Yeah.
You were put on a transplant list as you were becoming more and more sick.
Yeah. So it took that 4 years to work out it was restrictive cardiomyopathy. And at that point, they said, "There's nothing really we can do. We've given you all the drugs we can give you. And at this point, your heart is in heart failure. And the only option there is at that point is transplant." So I was put on the waiting list in early 2007, April 2007. And luckily for me, by June 2007, they called me up and said, "We think we've got a match for you." And luckily for me, again, that match worked, because there's a lot of people who you can be called up for a prospective heart. But when you get to the hospital, the tests that they have to do on you to make sure you're well enough and the tests that they have to do on the heart, it just doesn't work out. And you can have quite a few, you know, stop starts. You don't necessarily get the first heart you're offered, but for me, a very short waiting time and the first heart. So I was incredibly lucky.
Do you remember the day that you found out that they had a heart for you?
I did, yeah. So back in those days, 16 years ago, you had a pager. And I was in the middle of the New Forest in Hampshire in England at the time, and taking some photos of in a deer park of all places, just about to pop home for a Sunday roast. And my pager went off and they said, "You got to be back at home in half an hour." And there was an ambulance waiting, and they drove me all the way from Hampshire up into Cambridgeshire, which is usually about a 3 hour drive, and it took them an hour. So we went very fast. It was exciting.
Did you have any kind of preparation for the fact that this would be some very, very sudden change?
You have to pack an overnight bag, and you have to be aware that the first time they call you might not be the time, so not to get your hopes up too much, but just to be ready for the call as well. And it's just one of those things, you know, I needed it. So I was really, really excited for the call to come, if it was going to work out or not. And, you know, everyone around me, including myself, all fingers crossed and just hoping for the best, really.
So you're driving, you get there in an hour, and then they prep you for surgery. How are you feeling?
Extremely nervous. I remember at the time saying to my family, I'm been very nice to everybody in the hospital, and I'm being very cheery so that no one around me is worrying, and just trying my absolute best to just keep positive, not think about it too much. Otherwise, I think I would have panicked, and just hoped for the best, you know, hope that it all goes well, because once I'm in the operating theatre, there's nothing more I can do, really.
And you also had your own experience of this operation from a different perspective with regards to your mum?
Yes. Yeah. So I, unfortunately, was going into my transplant story and my illness, having already sadly gone through it with my own mum. So she was diagnosed with restrictive cardiomyopathy as well when she was 16. And she'd got to 42 years old and had got extremely, extremely sick, sicker than I was. And unfortunately, when she went in for her heart transplant, she didn't make it through the operation. So I was going into mine knowing that that could potentially happen to me too. So, you know, you have to be very pragmatic about the you know, I've lived through it not working out, and just fingers and toes crossed that it would work out for me. But I have always said that being on the other side and worrying about someone who is sick and is going into an operation is actually strangely harder than the person who is then going into the operation themselves, because there's nothing you can do once you're told you've got to go and have something done. You know, the worrying, there's no point in worrying. Whereas when it's someone else and you're feeling very hopeless that you can't help them, I found that much harder, actually, than my own experience.
Mm. What was it like waking up from the transplant operation?
An absolutely incredible day. Because I hadn't felt my lips or my cheeks or the ends of my fingers in years, you kind of just forget that they're even there. And I remember first opening my eyes and thinking, oh, I can feel my lips. And I can feel my cheeks, and the ends of my fingers were plump and pink, and my toes were pink. And I just thought, wow, this is exciting. And I remember doing a little happy dance, because at that point you've got things down your throat, so you can't speak or anything. And I did a little double thumbs up happy dance that I was alive, and just thought, wow, I've done that. I've made it, you know, well done.
And the impact of the new heart, those changes happen to you so quickly, those physical changes.
Yeah, it is immediate. You know, you immediately feel better. I liken it to becoming a superhero. You know, I'd spent easily 10 years feeling ill, but living in a world where I was in my 20s and I was still trying to keep up with all the 20-year-olds. As soon as I woke up, all of a sudden I had energy. I didn't want to sleep anymore. I just wanted to be up and about and, you know, getting healthy and better and back home as quickly as possible. But I had so much more vigor, and I hadn't ever really experienced that before. So yeah, it was like becoming a superhero overnight. It was incredible.
And you had no rejection issues?
Nothing. So again, yes, it's a huge deal for lots of transplant recipients that they will have problems with their donor heart and they can get rejection from that organ, whereas I've never experienced anything like that. It's always been completely fantastic for me, so I'm again extremely lucky.
Do you know who gave you the heart?
I don't know much really at all. The way that it works, certainly in the UK, is you get to write to your donor family after a year or so of your transplant. Obviously hugely thankful, hugely grateful, and you know, hoping that they are okay, because my best day of my entire life is the worst day of their life. As I was so young as well, you don't know who you're writing to, if it's family members, if they're married, if it's their parents, you know, you just don't know. So yeah, said my thank yous, and don't really know much else. You know, it's completely up to them whether they want to have a conversation with me or not, and that's completely understandable.
Let's come to present moment. How did your heart become a showpiece in a museum?
It's not every day that that happens. While I was on the waiting list at Papworth Hospital, which is in Cambridge in the UK, the Wellcome Collection, who are a part of the Royal College of Surgeons, contacted people on the waiting list and said, we want to have this exhibition in London, and the centrepiece wants to be a human transplanted heart. And was anyone on the waiting list interested in being part of it? I immediately put my hand up because that kind of thing fascinates me. I love science. And, you know, I did a science degree myself. I've seen lots of things in jars. I find it really fascinating. So the idea that I could be a living part of a display like that was just fantastic. So yeah, jumped at the chance. And it just so happened that when they were ready, I was also ready. So yeah, my heart became centerpiece of a museum, which is very exciting. Lots of other really interesting specimens of lots of other, you know, animal kingdom animals. And obviously I'm part of that animal kingdom too. So yeah, it's very exciting to be part of it.
And the day that you visited the Hunterian Museum, you went along with your surgeon?
I did, yes. I haven't seen him since my transplant 16 years ago. So it was incredible just even to have met him again and get to thank him again for having saved my life. He's an incredible human being anyway. So to be able to meet him was fantastic. And then we were able to reminisce, if you can say that, about what happened 16 years ago and, you know, the things that were wrong with me at the time and what's happened since then, which is lots of exciting life, thankfully.
What did you think when you saw your heart there on display in a jar? Is it in a jar? Is that how it's being displayed?
It is. Yeah, it's in a jar. Like you see pickled pieces of other animals, that's me in a jar. It was very surreal, incredibly fascinating to be there anyway, but also, you know, quite moving. It's, you know, it caused me a lot of upset, but it also kept me alive for 22 years of my life. So, you know, I'm incredibly grateful to it too. So, yeah, it was very moving to see it again after all these years.
And now coming to all the things that have happened for you since, I understand you got married last year, for example, and you continued your studies.
Yeah, I finished my degree. I had a fantastic career ever since. I worked as a national park ranger, climbed mountains. I've been able to get married. You know, I've had an incredibly active, fun-filled life, which I just wouldn't have had if it wasn't for my incredible donor and their family. So, yeah, I can't be more grateful.
Here in New Zealand, organ donations are always being sought, and this is the case the world over, wherever we live. Telling your story helps that process, doesn't it? It helps understanding around it.
I think it is really lovely for organ donation to see people doing well from it. I think another reason why it was really important for my heart to be in the exhibition was, you know, if I can get people talking about organ donation in general, if I can get people seeing that, you know, them signing up for organ donation on the worst day of your life, you could be helping 10 other people potentially in their lives. And when it comes to people like me, you know, you'd be saving their life. And that, what is the greater gift than giving someone the gift of life? And I think seeing people do well and thrive from transplant can only hopefully promote that even more, which is why I'm very, very happy to talk about my story and hopefully give people a reason to speak to their families and hopefully donate their organs if the worst were to happen.
And I'm thinking about you and your surgeon being there and looking at your, we can say former heart, but it is still your heart. It just happens to be there and you now have a new heart, which happens to have been somebody else's. I'm wondering what you and your surgeon spoke about, or even if there are any words for such a moment.
I think he's as fascinated as I am about the fact that, you know, a heart that he worked on and my own heart is in a jar in a museum. I think that doesn't happen to the majority of hearts that are transplanted in the world. So yeah, I think we were just both incredibly fascinated by the fact that it's there, and it's essentially pickled in this jar, and the person it came from is standing right next to it. You know, it's not a story that you hear every day. And he just reminisced about the transplant itself, and he makes out that transplantation is incredibly easy because he's a fantastic human being. But yeah, I think we just mostly talked about what's happened in the last 16 years and how incredible that is for organ donation to be able to do that for people in the world.
Are there any things that you do now to maintain this new heart, or is it just about living a healthy life?
Obviously, I take quite a few anti-rejection drugs, you know, immunosuppression drugs to keep me alive. And outside of that, you know, incredibly healthy diet, healthy lifestyle. We do a lot of walking and running and just keeping as happy and healthy as I possibly can to keep this new heart healthy for as long as I possibly can.
You are such a testimony to living life to the fullest. Would you agree?
I hope so. I do feel that, you know, from the point of view of seeing my mum go through what she went through and knowing that there is a person out there who passed away in order for me to stay alive, I feel like I owe it to countless people to stay healthy and stay happy. And, you know, I'm incredibly grateful for every single day that I wake up. You know, I say all the time to people, you know, don't waste time. Don't wait. If you have something you want to do or something you want to learn or somewhere you want to go, go and do it. You know, you never know what's around the corner. So it's really important to stay happy and be grateful.